And welcome to the Unnamed Movie Podcast. This is Andrew. Hello?
I'm waiting on Damien. Damien's supposed to say his name first.
Oh, there, I thought something actually broke with the podcast.
And it appears that Damien is not here, is not available. No, he just plain doesn't like the show we're about to talk about. Andrew, what are we talking about today?
The truth of the matter is he wasn't invited, right? We need to be clear about this. Because at the end of the day, I don't think it's worth putting him through 7.5 hours of something which we know he would hate.
Yes.
I mean, maybe it might be worth it now that I say it out loud and think about it.
7.5 hours of torture for a show he probably doesn't like and probably would have to catch up with, which would be quite a few more hours of torture, Andrew. That would be fantastic. That would be wonderful. Oh my goodness.
Oh. So anyways, today, I kind of wanted to sit down and talk about the latest season of Arrested Development, which was released all in one go, all out on Netflix last weekend. Douglas, you're a huge fan of the show.
Yes, sir.
You were one of the many who were crying tears of sadness when they finally really got cancelled from Fox. How many years ago?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I was.
How many years ago was it?
It was about 2006. 2005, 2006, about there.
Okay, so it's been 6 years since Michael Cera has had to be
George
on
Michael.
Television. Right.
Or on television. Okay, fine. Yeah.
So, as the devoted fan of the show, how did you feel about this season?
I'm of a couple of minds. I really did enjoy myself in the end. But the thing that I loved about, I guess, the original three episodes and that also kind of poured out in this newest season was just the density of it. How dense and how many, not just in your face, plot points or jokes that there were, but also just behind the scenes, or not really behind the scenes, but there's always so many levels that you can take it. You know, there's on the surface where Job does something stupid and you're like, yeah, that's funny. But then there's so many other things, whether it's self-referential stuff that they always do, or just things in the background that you don't notice. And like, for instance, I guess Tobias is notorious for not realizing what he's saying or what he's writing, and things like anus tart, where he thought, or he meant it as a new start, you know, on his license plate. That was kind of funny. But I think my favorite joke that was not really put out there was, I think it may have been the first episode, it may have been the second episode of this season, when there's a news item on the TV, and, well, I think all of the news items, so before, when it was on Fox, it was all on Fox News. Now it's on Imagine News, which is Opie's company, Ron Howard's company. But it was a British person talking about whatever the news was going on. And at the bottom, you know, they have a ticker that says, you know, who this person is, where they are. That's how all the news kind of operates. And the place that there were was actual Britain. That was what was written down in the bottom, which was a reference to the fact that in the last season, or the previous season rather, you had, I think it was called either Little Britain or a fake Britain or something like that, where
my favorite
have
Arrested Development story, yeah, then, by the way.
Yeah.
I was livid that they didn't get a chance to have Charlize Theron come back just for even half a moment to be like, hey.
Yes, yes, yes. But they did reference her. They did talk about her. They were like, yeah, I had a girlfriend once and she was... Well, let's not talk about that. So they kind of spoke about her. But I just love how much things there are. And that's why I love things like this and things like Coen Brothers comedies. Because I know that even though I watched this all in almost a couple of days, I can easily watch it again and again and still have new things to find out, to laugh about, and to enjoy. And it's the same thing even with the rest of the series. Because actually, what I meant to do and what I didn't do because you wanted us to talk about this really early was to start over, essentially, and watch 1 through 3, which I haven't seen in a few years. So I'm kind of a little bit rusty there. And kind of get that whole, I guess, continuity, if it could be gotten. And I've started that now. So I've watched the first couple of episodes in season one. And it's, again, there's so many things that you can easily miss or just isn't out there front and center.
So when the show was coming back, there were, and this season, it must be said, is very different from how all the other seasons play.
Yep.
All the other seasons play like a traditional television show where we're moving in a straight line from episode to episode. Everyone leads into each other into a full story of all X number of episodes in the season. This season, however, and it's, I don't know if this was solely chosen because of the scheduling of all of the actors, because, you know, it's kind of like that thing. I remember with all this Kickstarter stuff going on, people were going like straight to Joss Whedon, like, all right, you see it's out there, go and kickstart a Firefly reunion and we will pay you gajillions of dollars. And he's like, no, because that means that all of the actors who were in Firefly, I'd have to get them fired from their current jobs to come and do this, right? And that's a waste of time. And all these people are now no longer these small actors. Well, at least not all of them.
No, there's only one person on that TV show that's not a small, that has steady work right now. Okay. and that work deserves to be fired, by the way. It deserves to be cancelled. It's castle foolishness. What the hell?
Oh, come on, man. And so because of this, they couldn't have the show being like that. So technically, the show is really about catching up with these characters, moving up to this ultimate cinco de cuatro moment. you kind of end up getting each character's story within each episode, with every episode. So I think when I was looking through, there was one Buster episode. There were like 3 Lindsay episodes. There were a couple Job, and I'm kind of sad that he got one of the lesser numbers by my count, because Job is my favorite character. Okay,
actually,
in the show.
You know who I was upset was missing most of the show was Buster. Buster, while one of the smaller roles, is probably the hilariousest person on this TV show. Just the way that he, most of the time he's there, he's not even really saying anything, and if he is, it's definitely nothing that's sensible, that makes sense. It's, you know, he's either mumbling to himself or just making awkward guttural noises that kind of portray his the fact that he's not quite all there, you know. And he always gets himself, as do I guess all the characters, into the most zany situations.
Douglas, you have to understand, Buster learnt from early. He's never to be seen nor heard. That is his role in life as a son. I would tell you what school he went to, but I've forgotten the name to make the joke. They keep saying it throughout all the previous seasons. He's a whatever man because he went to that school and
yeah.
How many years he was there. But can I tell you, sadly, I didn't know after, because I didn't watch his show when it was originally airing on Fox. I actually marathoned through this show like a year ago on Netflix. And throughout the whole of that, I didn't know that Ron Howard, who was doing the voiceover for all of the previous episodes and the little in-between stuff that they always do for the voiceovers.
Yup, that is definitely Ron Howard. And I love how he's in this season, right? But also, he was very... If you didn't know it was him that was the voiceover, you wouldn't get it. But there were, like, a bunch of jokes where he was kind of like, you know? And it's really great to have an award named after you. And then you have the Opie Award in front of you, where Opie is his character in Andy Griffith's show. And so, you know, you realize that he's kind of... I don't want to say tongue-in-cheek, but, you know, kind of in the vein or the mood of or the tone of this show, kind of arrogantly bigging himself up, but for our benefit, you know?
It is kind of crazy. And I mean, one thing that I noticed, which was very interesting, and I kind of thought was a cool little nod to how they're changing, how the show is progressing as opposed to previously, is the opening credits, where first of all they say, instead of the generic thing, they say a family whose future was abruptly cancelled.
Yes.
kind of poking at the fact that they were cancelled.
Yep.
And then of course what I liked even more was the fact that they would change the name of the person whose quote-unquote arrested development they're looking at based on whose episode it was, and you'd even see the relationships to each character whenever they came up. So if it was a Michael episode, you would see it when it came to George Michael, it would say his son, as opposed to if it was a maybe episode, it would say his cousin, her cousin.
Yeah.
I found that really kind of fun. Like, after a while, I started to notice things like that with this show.
No, of course. And that's the type of thing, as I said, that this show is so great with. Just the details that, you know, more than likely you don't see, not more than likely, you definitely don't see all of them on watch number one. And so you have to watch again and again to just, you know, kind of juice all the fun. All the funny out of this episode. I mean, out of this series. And, it's great, you know. Not only is Michael's development arrested anymore, it's the rest of the family. Because it was all about Michael for the first 3 years. Or at least in the opening credits.
Yeah. Well, it was basically all... While we definitely got everyone's story somewhat, it basically was him we were following. Him and George Michael.
Yeah. But yes, Job is a funny man. I'm sad that he screwed the pooch on his latest TV show. He needs to get something better
I'm
again.
I'm pretty sure that's not his fault.
No, I know it's not his fault, but I'm going to put it on his shoulders so that he feels some sort of guilt and is, you know, feels like he needs to make it up to me with something better.
I'm sure he'll have a series of at least 5 more shows where they all suck.
Oh yeah. Like Running Wild, did you ever watch that one?
I watched like a couple episodes and I went, yep, not happening.
Yeah.
So my question to you, being a fan of the show, with this change is, number one, was this a positive change for you? And second, like, which of the characters did you enjoy their story most?
At first, it wasn't really the biggest positive to me, but they figured out a way to do it well. As I say, I'm just a little bit sad that certain people didn't get as noticed. Buster is one. As you mentioned, Job is another. I don't know. Who was my favorite? My favorite may have been George Michael, for the single reason that he got to wear his Matador pants and almost got to do his chicken dance. It was when he was on the phone trying to figure out, you know, what is the name of our program? Is it Block or is it Woodblock or is it
Block?
And then the guy's like, he's like, no, that'd be funny. Like, why would we do that? Because that's how a chicken sounds. And Peahound, what a name, is like, what? And so I could just see in my head, I'm like, yes, he's about to do the chicken, and he even lifts up his foot in his dance sort of ritual. Because I think what was that was one of the best jokes from the original series, was that each of the family members, for some reason, had a different take on what chickens sound like. So they also had a different take on what they move like. And so whenever, for whatever reason it was, please don't ask me to tell you why in normal conversation you would have to imitate a chicken. But they all had to at one point in the series. And after everybody had done it, I guess for the first couple of years, there was a culmination of sorts where all the characters, from Michael to George Michael down, had like a full-on chicken dance together where everybody was imitating the chicken. And that was a piece of art right there. So just for it to remind me of that scene alone was probably my favorite part, at least, in the show. But I mean, this series did very well to kind of merge everybody's stories together and to get a sufficient level of confusion and collusion and competition between all of these people. And of course the conflicts are there as well, and that's kind of what drives that's what drives this show, the dysfunctionality of all of these crazy people. The fact that if Michael sees a dead dove in a freezer, he immediately knows this person has come into contact with my brother Gob at some point, right? And it's just, boy, this show, I think probably the biggest positive for this show, which somebody like me will have, but somebody like, not necessarily you, but maybe a Damien if he hadn't watched the first few seasons, is that a large part of the humor is self-referential. So if you haven't seen the first 3 years, you almost look at it and you're like, I don't understand why this is supposed to be funny, but it looks like it should be, you know? Which is a good and a bad. It's good for us folks, but bad for the newcomers. But I think there's also enough, like, genuinely funny stuff that don't need any sort of, you know, wink or inside knowledge to enjoy.
That's very true. But just on a side note, talking about the George Michael plotline, like, can I tell you how crazy funny I found it when we went to Spain with him? And I think mainly it was the fact because throughout the whole season we're seeing these moments within his dorm room, and there's a poster on the wall, which is of the Pedro Almodovar film, Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down.
I didn't even notice that.
And I saw that immediately, and it's partially because I've been watching a lot of Almodovar films recently. And that is a movie in which the plot of that is basically Antonio Banderas captures this woman and ties her down and forces her to love him. And by love, I don't mean sex. I mean, like, emotion love. And I just thought it funny that it was there in the first place. And then we find out he had this whole Spanish storyline where he basically gets to sleep with this woman who looked familiar to me, but I couldn't place her watching.
She was actually, you bring up, by talking about her, you bring up another thing that I really liked about the show. All of these cameos by these huge, well, not all of them are huge stars, but at least to me, that I know them from other places and I'm like, oh, I like this person. That lady that you're talking about was Catalina from My Name Is Earl. So I think that's probably where you know her from. You're looking at me like, My Name Is Earl? What? I don't know what.
No, I know what My Name Is Earl is. I just never really watched it.
You horrible person. That show is fantastic. And Catalina is,
yeah,
great.
I know it was one of those shows that you went crazy for, but I just kind of went like, oh, I'll watch an episode here, and I just never watched it again, you know?
Yeah, I know. But I think if I was to give like an award for who was the best person in this show. Overall, that wasn't one of the family. Well, wasn't one of the main family. Would be Kristen Wiig as young Lucille. She was
and Seth Rogen as young.
Well,
as
no,
young
Seth Rogen is funny just because he's doing funny things. But even the way that Kristen Wiig not only did funny things and did the sort of things that Lucille would do because it was written down on a piece of paper for her to read and say, which is essentially what Seth Rogen did. But Kristen Wiig, Andrew, literally watch one of her scenes again and close your eyes and try to differentiate between her voice and the real Lucille's voice. You really can't. It's not that far off. She was like, she had it down to a T. It was just uncanny. How,
it's all Mallory Archer.
Forget Archer. This is where she belongs.
Oh, man. But weirdly enough, I think if I was to call out one of my favorite cameos, I mean, not cameos, but just other people in the show, that wasn't from the original series, I think I would have to call on Ilsa Fisher.
Oh, Isla Fisher? Okay, yeah.
Or is it Isla or is it Ilsa?
It's Isla, I-S-L-A. It might actually be pronounced Isla. I don't know how to pronounce it. But, yes. She...
I don't know. Maybe it's because she got, like, a bigger storyline than most of the others.
I liked her
story. And you got to spend more time with her.
That's what I liked about her. I liked the conflict that she created. Let's put it that way. The fact that if it wasn't for her, I wouldn't get to see George Michael punch Michael Bluth in the face. That, you know, that I applaud her for that.
But, I mean, talking about, like, some of my favorite moments from this season, right? There are a good amount. I mean, you brought up Anostart, right? And I think my favorite thing about it is the first time we hear it, or at least the first time I remember hearing it in this season, was such a tiny moment that definitely didn't expect you to even register it happening. Is there was a point where they went to a prison, and you saw Tobias in the background as a setup for later in the show, and someone shouted out Anostart, and he went, you saw him get up and walk across, and it was just such a quick moment that it's like, oh, perfect. Even though I saw that coming a mile, the Anostart thing coming a mile away from when you saw the license plate, basically because of his analropist from previous seasons.
Yep.
And then he even makes a joke about it this time around, going, I decided to change that and call it a Theralist. You know, analropist didn't really come off the tongue very well. But, I mean, with the Isla Fisher character, there's a point where we actually get to see a lot of her acting career. And they make jokes about she was even in a Malick thing or a Woody Allen thing. And you kind of see shots of that. And it's just like, yeah, that is what a Malick thing looks like. There's even the joke where her name being a joke, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if they made this clear initially or if I just didn't pick up on this. But they kind of said that as all bastard children, she was named after the situation, her personality, and the place she was conceived in. And then later on we find out her name is Rebel Alley, right?
Yeah, she's Ron conceived Howard in the back of an alley. That's how I get it. I take it.
Right. But I mean, the show is just riddled with moments like that. I mean, I'm sure you have like a laundry list of your own favorite jokes.
You know, the well, let me see. What is there? I mean, there's so many things. I love Job just generally. If you just give me a Job Bluth television show, and I'll be so happy.
That's why you keep getting sad whenever his show sucks.
Yeah, that's exactly why. He has, on top of everything, he has his voice. Kind of like, you know, that British guy that he kind of rolls with the Peg crew sometimes. He was in Black Books as well. He was the roommate in Shaun of the Dead. He has one of those kind of voices. Both of them have it. It's just great.
You mean Dylan Moran?
No, that's Bernard Black.
Or Bilbo.
Not Bilbo.
Bill
either.
Bailey.
No, it wasn't any of the big guys. But if you look in Shaun of the Dead, the roommate of Simon Pegg and Nick Frost.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, him. You mean the guy who in Spaced was the boyfriend stealer, the girlfriend stealer who had the voice who was like, "Hey, how you doing?"
Exactly. Yeah. So both of them have this husky kind of commanding voice, you know, and both of them use it to kind of juxtapose that with just the most moronic person in the world, you know. And it works for both of them. And I love Job and his forget-me-nots. Or no, that's not what he calls them. Forget-me-nows.
Forget-me-nows. I loved whenever he does that line about illusions and tricks. This isn't a trick. A trick is what a whore does. This is an illusion. I love that line. I'm sorry. And I was so happy that they put it into the show.
Yup. and it's, you know, this thing is just like, what else was there? There was
the idea of the Chinese building a wall against Mexico, and then he eventually had Mongolians horde, and they only come in hordes, Douglas. Only in hordes.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's the fact that Tobias and his newly found girlfriend keep getting arrested for stealing the Fantastic Four rights. I mean, that's just...
Douglas, I know a street where they don't really police that much. We can go over there.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. And then,
so, all right, uh-huh. Douglas, while you really like the show, and Damien does not.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to be honest, I can empathize with people like Damien who view this show as something which feels unfunny because it's just a bit too much focused on what it's trying to do with its humor. Like, what do you say to those people other than...
Here's what I say to these people. Do you like Community? If they say yes, then this Arrested Development is just a more pointed version of Community. It's a more focused.
But I think Community is a bit more open about what it's trying to be funny with. Like it definitely is obvious about where the punchlines are in Community. This show, it almost doesn't even think they're punchlines when they're talking.
That's true. I mean, when you can have a joke, or at least for me, the one character is the joke in himself, just his name. His name is Bob Loblaw, and that is actually Scott Baio, who stars as a lawyer. And just the inaneness, I don't know what that turns into, of a name like that, that just flows off the tongue like you're just telling somebody blah, blah, blah. Like, I mean, this is definitely... not for the faint of heart. It is for dark souls like yourself and myself who are willing to take some serious punishment just so that we can laugh at somebody referencing something else. That's really what this show is. This show is serious awkwardness and serious making fun of what it said 5 minutes ago.
Well, I'm kind of just looking over because I was definitely like writing down things as I was watching this show because there are things that you're going to forget and then they come back at you. But just to be in general, talking about the way that this show structures itself, right? And it's something that I found annoying. when I was watching the first three seasons, especially in a marathon mode as I did, where it feels it needed to remind me of things which happened in the last episode or in the episode before it. And for I can understand its need in the previous television structure where you're coming back a week later and they want to just cue you into things, because every show does it. But the way that this show does with the Ron Howard voiceover, and even in moments where they will land a joke and they'll be like, okay, there's someone who forgot our setup, which happened 5 episodes ago.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And they kind of have to remind us about it so that we'll then find the joke funny. Mm-hmm. Like, that is definitely something which this show does numerous times. And is it that it's trying to say that we're stupid, or is it just...
Well, no. Well, I guess one thing is you have to remember that not everybody is crazy like us and watches, you know, 10 episodes right after one another, right? But yeah, that's, I guess, actually, that's something that I'm not too pleased about, the TV industry in general. I think the cable companies, specifically HBO, kind of started that with shows like The Sopranos and... The Wire, where they were like, okay, guys, we have to kind of catch you up to this point and then talk about the TV show. And there are a lot of shows that I hate that does it. But what I do like about this one in particular, this TV show, is not necessarily how they catch you up, but rather how they fill you in on what's going to happen next episode, because that actually never does happen. So when the episode ends, generally there's a section where it kind of says what happens next episode. And while what you see there is kind of loosely based on or related to what is actually going to happen in the next few episodes, you never actually see it. So it's kind of a joke about what you haven't seen, and then so that in itself is funny because, you know, it's some sort of punchline there. But also then, when you watch the next episode, it kind of fits together with it, you know? And so I really like the way they do that.
Okay, so just looking over the list of people who are in this show, because, I mean, There are a lot. I'm so happy to see people like Carla Weathers and Andy Richter coming back to make their own little cameos that they do. Because I loved the Carla Weathers stuff in the previous series. Where he was just basically milking Tobias dry for the littlest things. He'd come in and be like, "You're not going to eat that chicken? I'll go eat that chicken." And it's crazy. But I have to say, one of my favorite, like, new cameos or new little bit roles that mm-hmm. came in this series mm-hmm. had to be and I hope I have this right, Roger Slatterly, who I know best from Mad Men. I think that's his character name in Mad Men. He is the doctor in the early episodes with George Senior, who we see during Cinco de Cuatro throwing out all of his stuff into the river.
Oh, yes, yes. Okay, I know who you're talking about now. What are you talking about, Mad Men? He's Howard Stark. Come on.
That too, but Mad Men is more important, no, Douglas. Not. Mad Men is no, awesome. Because, I mean, there were moments, like, there was one point where he was giving an examination to George,
mm-hmm.
and he just pulled out this quiz, and he was just asking him all of these questions. You know, it was kind of like this moment in Stranger Than Fiction where... he was trying to figure out what kind of story he was in, and he would ask him, "Have you had a tragedy in your life? Did you see something bad?" And it was just these insane questions to come down to a resolution. And when it comes to the end, Roger is just like, "Well, I'm going to put on my thinking cap," and he just puts on the mask and goes high and says, "You should do this crazy thing," and then he goes and does it. It's as you said, inanity.
Yes.
I'm going to pretend like that's a real word.
Oh, yes. You know who I liked too, actually, was Ben Stiller.
Oh, yeah, he is great. I loved his episode, the episode of Job and him doing the gay off. And then even better, the final moment where they get tricked by Mae Whitman, who plays Anne, into actually having sex gay sex.
Oh my goodness. That's great. But you know what was a great well, it really was just a 5-second joke. But the fact that John Krasinski from The Office is in this series, he's in it for a very short time. And just the fact that he is in it or what he did in it really wasn't that funny. But he was a part of this bigger joke, which was great, which was the rivalry between Ron Howard and Jerry Bruckheimer. And the fact that, you know, Jerry Bruckheimer has friends on the building commission or whatever you'd call that. And so Ron Howard couldn't get his imagined building to be as tall as Jerry Bruckheimer's building. And, you know, so, but what he needed, he wanted to have more floors. So to do that, they had to make the floors smaller.
No, it was that he wanted his office to have a tall ceiling.
Yeah.
But he couldn't build the building higher because of this thing, so he just made the floor below him
exactly. and Brian Grazer wanted his ceiling even higher than Ron Howard, so you know, there was even weird things there, but that was a fun little joke. I love that they spend the time, they do the work, the work for something you and I wouldn't do. We'd just be like, okay, here's a story, right? Michael and his son are going to have sex with the same woman. And that is what we're talking about this whole season, right? As opposed to these guys, they're like, okay, that's one thing. And we'll do about 10 other big things. And then, you know what? We're going to spend time and money on this joke that's going to last 10 seconds. And it works so well. You know, and I appreciate that.
I mean, this is a show which, I mean, there's no doubt about it. Every season they felt they were going to be cancelled. And almost rightly so, because from what I've read, the viewership was never that strong.
Yeah, it wasn't. It's very, very much a cult show.
Like, I'm still surprised that Fox had a show like this on for 3 years.
Yeah, it was a hard-fought battle, Andrew. Every season we were at our wit's end. Are we getting cancelled? Am I going to be able to watch anything?
Like when I think about that, this show got 3 seasons, but my favorite Bradley Cooper cooking show on Fox only got like half a season. I'm kind of sad. Like I liked that cooking show, guys. The show where he was a chef.
Yeah, I remember.
It was
that.
A fun show. but yeah. Anyways, this I think like if there's anything this show has taught us, it's that there's always opportunities for second chances with shows. And we can start sending our laundry list in emails to Netflix, everyone, guys.
Yes, please. I have already sent my request in for Terriers, as well as a fifth season of Arrested Development. And they better get on that shit.
I've heard rumors that they might not be doing another season, but they might be doing a movie. Like a full wrap-up film for Arrested Development.
Yeah, well, there's all sorts of things going around. I see places where Mike Hurwitz, who is the creator, talks about a movie. I've seen places where Netflix representatives say that they don't feel like they're finished with it and they want to do more. So, you know, I guess we'll just have to see.
So, I mean, there are a ton of other things which happen in this season which you could talk about. I mean, there's the amazing character by Terry Crews, which I really liked.
Oh, damn it! I was hoping you wouldn't start talking about him. I hate him. I really do. I don't like him.
No, I know you don't really like him as an actor and the stuff that he does, because he does some silly shit in other movies. I mean, the first thing that pops to mind is his role in White Girls, right?
Oh, wow.
And that kind of stuff is horrendous. However, I do like him in stuff like this because his silliness kind of plays up a lot, right? I mean, when you see the evolution of his character as he moves from episode to episode where we're seeing different viewpoints, it gets funnier and funnier, right? There's a moment in which at first you think he talks about a flip-flop, flap-flip. And the next moment he's talking about prostitution. Right? And then you even get that final, the Buster episode, where you get to see him at home talking about how he's going to use Buster as a blindside. Right? We get a reference to the blindside, people. That movie was bad, but that was perfect as a joke in itself. But moving on, another cameo, which literally was only one episode and was for, if he got 5 minutes on screen, I don't think it was that much. Who I really like is Ben Schwartz. He's in House of Lies. And he was in the Job episode where he was one of the entourage of the music child, the music guy.
Oh, yes. I know.
I really like Ben Schwartz. I think he's really funny. I mean, I'm definitely not saying that he did much in this in this little bit, but the fact that he was there just made me smile.
Yeah, actually, that whole kind of sequence with Joe being getaway in the entourage was kind of interesting. Especially, did you realize that every time they passed this specific club, that there was a big neon sign on the top of the club that said "and Jeremy Piven"?
Yes, I kind of thought that was just making that was Entourage.
Yeah, that's them making fun of Entourage.
Oh shit! It's because they're talking about an Entourage exactly. For the whole episode. I knew it was an Entourage reference. I couldn't get why that was there.
But even when they first introduced them, they introduced them exactly like they did in the opening credits of Entourage. And even as they passed, you kind of went, "That guy looks like Vinny. That guy looks like Turtle. That guy looks like E." You know, it was very much made to...
So who was Ben Schwartz supposed to be? Was he Turtle? He had the hat.
Yeah, I don't know. I have to watch that section over again. But yeah, that's... That was going on there, Andrew. That was another joke that... As I say, you don't see everything the first time. It's just so great that, you know, you have... It's like, you know, they're like, you know what? We want you to keep watching this show. We want you to watch it again. Just don't worry. You can watch it as many times as you want. And this is the type of TV show that I own. I don't own very many TV shows. But this is one that I would and I should, because I really still don't, which is sad. But yeah, this...
The excuse I always use. It's not on Blu-ray.
That's true. It's not on Blu-ray. It is on Netflix, though. So at least I have it at my beck and call.
At your button press.
At my button press, yes.
I don't know if there's anything else I really want to bring up, but I don't know where this really falls for you, and you mentioned it's been a really long time since you've seen the original series. But would you call this an improvement, or the worst, or somewhere in the middle of where you kind of fall in the Arrested Development canon?
I think this is, well, first off, oh, clearly I don't know how to speak today. First off, it's a little bit different from the previous seasons, because the fact that each episode is so focused on one specific character. You've got cameos from people that we've seen before, you've got new entrants, and you've still got some of the other family members showing up every once in a while. But if you're in a Lucille episode, you're in a Lucille episode. If you're in a Michael episode, you're in a Michael episode. And that kind of irked me a little bit. Especially, I think, because I was just going straight through, just one after the other, because on Sunday when it came out, I got home from work and I think I watched about 9 or 10 episodes, just one after the other. And so it got to be a little bit, I kind of wanted everybody, you know. And at that point, things like Buster really hadn't done much, because I think he only has 1 or 2 episodes and they're all in the back.
He has the big episode.
Yeah, exactly.
In number 14, which I adore.
Yeah, and... actually, George Michael doesn't start until late either. And I was sad because I've always been a George Michael fan. I like Michael Cera. And I'm actually intrigued at how young he still looks, in the sense that he hasn't aged really since... well, clearly since this show has started, he has. Because you see him and he's, you know, like 10. But since he started looking like he wasn't 10, he really hasn't changed at all. He still looks like he could play a 12-year-old high school student. And I'm sad about that because I like to see him in more movies. And I was thinking when I was watching his episodes, and I think the last movie, at least I saw him in, was Edgar Wright's film, was Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
There was the one where he had the mustache.
Okay, all right.
Or was that before or after Scott Pilgrim?
That was slightly after, though, right?
Yeah, I think so.
But slightly.
he's been in things, and he's going to be in
as Inception, by the way.
And he's going to be in the new movie that's coming out in a couple of weeks. This is the end.
Well, first of all, I'm sure he's going to be in that for 5 minutes. Second of all, let's not talk about what he's going to be in. He hasn't been in something for a long time, or at least a big something that I've seen. And I miss that. I kind of want to see him be, you know, George Michael again, because he is George Michael in everything he's in.
I liked in the final episode when he moved into the now sex offender town. And the guys were shouting out, "How old are you? How old are you?" And he said he's 22. You could see the elation on their face. Oh, and yes. Somebody shouts out a line, "He's 22, but he looks 16.
Yeah, that was great. That was great. I mean, and actually, you don't even realize that, because I think he has an episode before the sex offender thing is made really big, or at least before you realize where he is, where he's still with Rebel Alley, and he's like, "Look, all of my friends, they gave me this party for you." And you don't realize until that episode that all his friends are his sex offender neighbors that just want to have sex with him and pretend that he's 16, you know? I like about this show. I love that it may take a while, but even the stupidest of references or the smallest of details come back and you're like, "Oh, that's why that's funny." So overall, I really did enjoy myself. As I say, wasn't a huge fan of the focus, but it worked out in the end. And I know there's still a lot of things I haven't seen that I will love about this show on the second and the third watch. And I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to loving this show even more. I don't know where I'd put it when I compare it to the other seasons. I'm going back, and it's actually a little bit hard for me to differentiate the seasons sometimes. I know the last season, I know season 3 is Fake England. But it's a little hard for me to...
For your eyes only.
Oh, it's hard for me to
separate. I have to say
this.
That I'm really sad that we haven't talked about Maybe yet, because I thought she had a really good storyline in this season.
Yeah, she was fun. But actually, I forgot. I was very impressed. Jeff Garlin has good fashion sense. He was in one of the episodes wearing my shirt that says, you know, the black one that says movies, and it's been ruining
yes,
the book.
Yes, I remember. Yeah. Actually, no, Douglas, that's the fact that you own that shirt means that he has bad fashion sense.
Oh, you asshole.
and but talking about that for 1 second, because we keep extending this, is I liked how this show kind of brought in clips from other shows. So, like, you saw bits of Jeff Garlin from Curb Your Enthusiasm. Or at the very least, they put in the Curb Your Enthusiasm music.
Yeah, exactly.
To make me
they
feel
put in
like
the music. I don't think that was from Curb Your Enthusiasm, but actually, you make a. Oh, sorry. No, keep going.
No. But they when you see them pull in clips from the previous series of Arrested Development, they have this watermark over it, saying "Trial Version Show Stealer," mm-hmm. "Trial Pro," or something like that.
Yeah.
And I just found that kind of weirdly funny.
Actually, I was about to say that you reminded me of that, and I always found that annoying. And I don't know why. It's one of those things. The only thing is, though, and I guess it kind of, again, it's these small things that they're like, I'm going to spend so much time on making this joke that you're going to have to laugh in the end. I really didn't like it. And then up until the end, I think it's in either the second to last or the last episode. And you notice the watermark says, I think it's Show Stealer Pro, and it's the trial version. And so at the end of one of the last episodes, you're watching some previous footage from the earlier seasons with that watermark in there, and then the scene just stops and you see a message pop up to say something like trial finished. You know, and
I didn't catch that.
That's just stupid. You assholes. You had to make something that I hated be funny. I hate you.
It's just like this show has been doing. It's taking 10 episodes to set up a really good joke.
Yeah.
And then you for the 10 episodes, you're sitting there going like, this isn't, why are you doing? And then the joke comes and you're like, oh, I get it. No, that's perfect.
Yep. That's what this show is. This show is just, it's like, don't watch me if you're going to watch one episode. Don't, because you won't appreciate this.
I can't wait to see all the articles going up of people hypothesizing a better order of watching this show.
Ah.
Of this season.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be interesting. Because it's very interlinked. You've got things happening in the past, in the future, in the past, and all that good stuff.
Because I'm pretty sure if we go and we watch even the first episode alone, now knowing everything that happens, we can start to see certain things in the first episode which are funny based on what happened mentioned in another episode, which kind of sets up a different person's storyline, which is what they've been talking about with this Arrested Development season.
Yeah, exactly. You know what would be the greatest, though, if you start now watching season one again and you see something and you're like, but that's from the new season. That's what that is.
so you're telling me that Mike Hershowitz, I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, is a time scientist like Damian?
He most certainly is. He may not be at Damian's level. He might just have an MSc when Damian has a PhD. But, yeah. He seems
anyways,
to be studying that.
I think this is a good point to end it off. We can put our applause in, say congrats Netflix, you're 2 for 3 so far this year.
Oh, this year, okay.
Because I mean, what other show did they bring out? The Lilyhammer? That was a co-production.
Well, so was House of Cards, I think, and so was this. Wasn't it?
House of Cards wasn't with anyone else. House of Cards was something that everyone else passed on, and Netflix said, money, no. I think they just bought the rights to it. I don't know if they have any intermingling with Fox other than getting the rights from Fox.
Beep, beep.
Beep, beep. But yeah, I could totally be wrong, but at least for the year they're 2 for 3, because I watched only like 20 minutes of Hemlock Grove and I couldn't take it
anymore.
Yeah,
that show was horrible.
So anyways, we're mostly positive on Netflix's Arrested Development.
Yes sir.
Good season.
Yes sir.
Pretty funny. Fans of the show will love it. And that's been the episode, so thanks for listening. You know where to find the show, over at G-Man Reviews and through iTunes and Stitcher. Douglas, he's on Twitter. DJR lost his name. Damon isn't here. And I'm on Twitter at G-Man Reviews. So thanks so much and good night.